That means these 7 days are not 7 days of material coming into being. They are 7 days of the cosmic temple inauguration. That's how an Israelite would have understood it, I would suggest. If they are not 7 days of material origins, but 7 days of functional origins related to the cosmic temple, then those 7 days tell us nothing about the age of the earth, because the age of the earth is a material issue. And if this is not a material account, it can't answer that question for us. And the 7 days don't have anything to do with that. There are 7 days of a temple inauguration. Are they 7 24-hour days? Fine with me. Not a problem. But that wouldn't have anything to do with the age of the earth. That's a material question. But you see how we have imposed our material interests on the biblical text, and we sit here and argue with one another about whether there are 7 literal days for the entire material cosmos to come into existence, or whether they're day ages, or whether they're this and that. And we're so interested in the age of the earth questions, the material questions, and we've tried to drag those questions, kicking and screaming, out of the text of Genesis, and we argue about them. And that's really not what Genesis 1 is about. A serious, literal reading of Genesis 1 would see it, I propose, as an account of functional origins. This is not a dodge. This is trying to understand the Israelite way of thinking. And we cannot be more serious about the text than to think about it the way they thought about it. That's got to yield the most serious reading. The text asserts, I would propose then, that in the 7-day initial period, God brought the cosmos into operation, functional ontology, by assigning roles and functions, and that's what this account is all about. Not a material account. Again, we go back to the temple. Remember, Solomon spent 7 years doing what we might call the material phase, quarrying the rock, mining the gold, shaping the rock, hauling it into place, chiseling it, setting it all up just right, getting the furniture made out of wood, coating it with gold, sewing the vestments, all of the material phase. All of that's done, okay? There it is. Everything's done. The building, you can stand there and look at it. Wow, that's stunning. Is it a temple? No. Why? No sacrifices are being offered. And more importantly, God's not there. Can't be a temple if God's not there. It's not functioning as a temple. The material phase is separate. And the material is not what brings it into existence. It could sit there for millennia. And if God never was in it, it's not a temple. But then they have the 7-day inauguration, and the functions are declared, and the functionaries are installed, and God comes in and takes up his residence in the temple, and now it's a temple. The material phase is not sufficient to say that it existed, and it really doesn't matter very much. It's necessary preparation, but it doesn't matter. When the biblical text keeps talking about, then it was good, then it was good, then it was good. What's that mean? We lots of times get thinking that that means something moral, or that he's really done good workmanship. Nice job, God. Well, no, we have to figure out in the context to an Israelite audience what that would mean. Good can mean lots of different things, just like in English, good in Hebrew, tov, can mean lots of different things. So how would we tell what kind of good it means? Context, context, context. Is there anything that is not good? It is not good for man to be alone. Function. That means that all the time God says this is good, what's he mean? It's ready to function. It's all set up. It's ready to go. It's like the pilot in the cockpit going through the checklist. Check, 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 check. And you're glad he does it. Because otherwise, okay, never mind. Okay, so it's going through the checklist, making sure everything's ready to roll. That's what's happening in Genesis 1. Okay, let me go through this rather quickly. This is the time I wanted to stop and give you some time for questions. I want to go through this very quickly so you see some of the underlying ramifications. You know, science works by what they call methodological naturalism. That just means science is not trying to find God. As a matter of fact, if scientists found something that they could only explain by God, God did it, they would say, oops, that's not science anymore. That's a metaphysical, theological decision. Okay, and science isn't geared to handle that. Whether it could be is another matter, but it's not. Okay, so science works on this idea that they're not trying to figure out, well, this happened because of that, and this happened because of that, and this happened because of God, and this happened. Nope, can't do it. That's not science anymore. Okay, so science isn't trying to plug God into the picture. That doesn't mean God's not in the picture. Okay? When we talk about natural laws, we're dealing with categories that they didn't have in the ancient world. In the ancient world, there is nothing that's natural. There's nothing God's not in. God is involved in everything that happens. And this is true whether it's Israel or Babylon or Canaan or wherever it is. Gods are involved in everything. And so there's nothing that's natural. They don't talk about miracles in the Old Testament. Sometimes your translations might. Oops, epic fail. Okay, they're not talking about miracles. They talk about signs and wonders. Signs and wonders is a different category. Signs and wonders are demonstrating that God is acting, that God's plan is being shown, God's will is being revealed. That's signs and wonders. God's power is being demonstrated. It's not to say, oh, up till now we could explain everything naturally, but now, oops, no, we can't. That they don't have that category in the ancient world. God's doing everything. God cannot intervene in the ancient world. Because you can't intervene in something you're doing. I couldn't intervene in this lecture. I'm giving it. Did you notice? Okay, so intervention is not terminology. I mean, it works for us, you know, that's because of Kant, you know. Anyway, but that's not appropriate for the ancient world. God is involved in everything. So just because we might be able to give a naturalistic explanation for something doesn't mean that God's not in it. Usually we think that we've got a pie. So something like origins, and we're slicing up the pie, and things that science can explain, we say, oh, okay, so that's natural. And the things science can't explain, oh, that must be God. And then the more we learn about science, the less God gets to do, and the smaller God gets. That's called God of the gaps. It's not a good way of thinking. Okay? But that's the way we often think about it. Once we have a scientific explanation, somehow that cuts God out of that picture. Okay? Well, we just have to do a different dessert. We have to think in terms of a layer cake. And science has the bottom layer, and they're trying to find out as much of that as they can, and their tools work with the bottom layer. God's on the top layer. Everything that they're exploring is stuff God's doing. Everything that they explain, it's ways that God's working. God's on the top layer above it all. He's doing all of that, and science can divvy up the bottom layer between things they can explain and things they can't. Fine. Okay, but that's a different kind of picture. So God's involved in everything. The observation of natural cause and effect does not remove God from the picture. Psalm 139:13, you knit me together in my mother's womb. God's doing that. That doesn't negate the whole field of embryology. We don't talk about godless embryologists, and we don't pick at OB-GYN offices. It's okay that they can do the science part, and whatever they decide, that's fine. God is doing it. That's God knitting us together in our mother's wombs. Okay, so just because there's a naturalistic understanding doesn't rule out that God is involved. It's the same thing when we start talking about evolution. Just because science just looks at the science side of it and the naturalistic explanations they can give doesn't mean God couldn't work from that. You know, it'd be no lesser of an act by God if he did something over a billion years than if he did it instantaneously. He could do it either way. His choice, you know, but sometimes he chooses time processes, okay? Moms are real glad that he chooses 9 months instead of instantaneous. Okay, that would be a little uncomfortable. Okay, 9 months is good, okay? And so it's just as much, and I'm sorry, it's just as much an act of God to do things over long periods of time. And in some senses, the longer it gets, the more we just sit in awe at what God can do. Just because science can explain something doesn't take God out of the picture. That's the point. Okay. Now, if Genesis is not an account of material origins, then the only place where we can get an account of material origins is from science. And maybe science gets it right, and maybe science gets it wrong, but that's the only place we have to look. The Bible doesn't offer one. That means the Bible doesn't offer some theory of material origins that we need to defend. And for us to say, no, I'm sorry, I stand on the Bible, you can't come here, science. On that point, there's not a lot we can do, because if the Bible has not offered a material account, there's nothing there to defend. There's no material account that we have to stand up for and go to the wall. If there were, I'm all for it. I'm always willing to go to the wall for the Bible. But if there isn't something, there's no wall, nothing to go to. If the Bible does not have an account of material origins, there's still theology to go to. God is part of it. Here I stand. But that doesn't rule out that we can explain things scientifically.